everyone. I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at Affectiva, a smart AI company. Welcome to the Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we will interview a thought leader doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little bit about us, SmartEye is the global leader in human insight AI, technology that understands, supports, and predicts human behavior in complex environments. We are bridging the gap between humans and machines for a safe and sustainable future. Our multimodal software and hardware solutions provide unprecedented human insight into automotive and behavioral research, supported also by Affectiva and iMotions, companies we acquired in 2021. Our Affectiva Media Analytics division provides the world's largest brands and market researchers with a deeper understanding of how customers and audiences engage with content, products, and services. Our industry-leading emotion AI is used by 70% of the world's largest advertisers and 28% of the Fortune Global 500 companies. Today's episode features Graham Page, Global Managing Director, Media Analytics at Affectiva. Graham and I discuss some takeaways from his recent presentation on how brands can leverage emotion AI for powerful campaigns during difficult times, plus a deep dive into our recent product release around conversational engagement and valence metrics. Let's listen in to learn more. Okay. Hi, everyone. And thank you for joining today with me. Once again, I have Graham Page. Thank you so much for making the time to speak with me today.
Always happy to be here. Always happy to talk.
Awesome. Okay. So we've had you on the podcast before. Maybe let's just start with a brief background for you. For those of you who don't know about maybe our work in the media analytics space, can you tell us quickly how your career path has taken you to Affectiva SmartEye?
Yeah, I can. So I've worked at Affectiva and SmartEye now for the last 3 years. I run the media analytics division, which is the part of the business that focuses on using the Affectiva emotion AI technology in the marketing and kind of brand owner and market research and media business. I've been a long-standing user of the Affectiva Emotion AI technology. So I first worked with Affectiva at its founding when I was on the client side. So that was back maybe 10 years ago now. So was one of the first, I think, to use the technology for advertising testing research, for instance, and have loved it so much that I joined the company a few years ago.
Awesome. Great. Okay. So I also recently learned a fun fact about you that you shared as part of a speaker intro, which was, quote, "The first time you ever flew in a plane, you jumped out." So please explain yourself, because I need to know what this means.
Okay. So yes, this is a long time ago now, sadly. So when I was at university, I did a parachute jump for charity, which was a great experience. But when I did said parachute jump, it was the first time I'd flown in a plane. So for a couple of years at least, I had taken off in a plane but never landed, because obviously the first time I flew, I did a parachute jump. So I do remember when, as the plane was taking off, I was much more interested in the fact that I was flying than what I was about to do. So it probably distracted me quite well for what was coming next.
Oh man, you are a braver soul than I am. Okay, awesome.
Wouldn't necessarily do it again, but yeah.
But it's done. Great. Okay, cool. So for those who are unfamiliar with Affectiva's background in media analytics, I know you touched on it a little bit, and maybe you could briefly explain, like, explicitly, you know, what our offerings are.
Yep, sure, can do. So the technology, as I think most of you know who are listening, it focuses on using AI algorithms to understand people's facial expressions, and from that, therefore, the kind of reactions or responses that they may be having to all sorts of experiences. So the technology can be deployed across a very wide range of use cases. But in the case of media analytics, it's often used to understand how people react to and engage with, say, entertainment content or advertising content. So we do a lot of work in trailer testing and in testing advertising before it is used by businesses, because obviously they want to optimize the technology and optimize the advertising prior to air, because they're spending a lot of money. But also it's used more widely in the market research industry for things like qualitative interviews, so the kind of focus groups or depth interviews that people may be familiar with. Obviously, understanding what not just what people say, but, you know, what they really mean based on their kind of nonverbal communication. That's a huge part of the qualitative market research industry. And our technology can be used to add a layer of additional insight to that, kind of flagging when people are really engaged with what they're saying rather than perhaps, you know, a little bit indifferent. And that's particularly useful, I think, right now, as more and more research has moved from a focus group facility where the researcher can kind of see the person right there, they can really pick up on their body language, to a more virtual approach where often people are talking on video conference or just audio, and so it's often harder for researchers to pick up on some of those subtle cues. So I think our technology helps fill that gap in the kind of qualitative research industry as well, but we're used across a variety of approaches. We've also been used more recently in testing people's responses to new product concepts and innovations. So not just when it comes to kind of testing a finished ad, but actually going all the way back into the product concept itself and understanding whether really people are lit up by this idea or not. So yeah, we're used throughout large parts of the market research process in particular, but yeah, we're really focusing on essentially measuring those unspoken responses, as unspoken kind of reactions that people may not even realize that they're having, but which are actually really important to understand, to really know, well, okay, what is it about this product? What is it about this experience? Or what is it about this content that really, really lights people?
So there's a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about today. So the first, you recently gave a talk at NMSBA's Neuromarketing Web Forum in Berlin. The talk titled "The World's on Fire, Fancy a Burger, Leveraging Emotion AI to Build Emotionally Powerful Campaigns in Difficult Times." And we will link to the description in the show notes, but maybe you could give a high-level overview of this keynote.
Sure, happy to. So yeah, to kind of explain myself or explain the title, I guess we were really trying to deal with the topic that, we're all living and have lived through some quite tough times and still are doing so at the moment. And in kind of those difficult times, is it not just a bit crass for brand owners and advertisers to just kind of carry on as normal? So, if we're facing a crisis, how can you kind of advertise bleach and talk to people about such trivia? And so we wanted to tackle that because clearly, while the context may be different now for many people in many parts of the world, still life goes on, business goes on, business still has to carry on. So we wanted to understand really whether the right thing to do was to go quiet, or perhaps to change the way brands talk to consumers, or whether actually consumers can deal just fine with business as usual. So that was really what we looked at. We looked across a huge amount of data that we've got. We've obviously been working in the advertising space for a decade now. We've researched over 70,000 ads. So we've got a really unique, I think, perspective on both the way people's reactions to advertising has changed, but also a perspective on what works and particularly what works in as the social climate changes. So that was really the areas that we looked at. And we actually found some quite interesting things, which are, for instance, that advertising, certainly response to advertising, has changed over the last decade. If anything, advertising has become more engaging, and maybe listeners may not fully agree with that, or it may not feel that way, but that's what the data says, is actually the content that we research has become more engaging on an emotional level over time. But the nature of that engagement has changed, and it has become, if anything, the reaction has become a little bit more negative. So advertising arguably is kind of becoming more emotional, but it may not be leaving people quite in as positive a frame of mind, which is kind of interesting, given that I think many advertisers are rightly trying to make an emotional appeal, because that is powerful and it does mean that people engage. So I think we'd seen that trend a couple of years ago when we first looked at this, and we took another look at the data now in a kind of a post-COVID or living with COVID world. And it was interesting to see that trend had actually accelerated. So, advertising continuing to be more engaging as perhaps advertisers take a more emotional approach. But the more negative, typically negative expressions that people, when people watch those ads, have tended to outweigh the more typically positive ones, which again is kind of interesting. So that was one interesting data point. But what was also interesting was then saying, well, okay, let's look at the, you know, the advertising that's more effective versus less effective, and, you know, to see if that, if there's a difference there. And in particular, let's look at advertising that deals with difficult issues. So over the last few years, we have looked at a number of different issues. We've done a lot of work with our one of our big partners, Kantar, to look at responses to advertising that deals with sustainability issues, to, you know, responses to advertising that deals with COVID, responses to advertising that, you know, where the brand is trying to articulate its purpose, and other cases where, you know, they've taken an explicitly kind of inclusive approach to the casting or the storyline. So we've looked a lot at advertising recently that is dealing with an issue.
Yeah.
And that really kind of was fascinating, because what it did show was, again, you often saw ads that were very emotionally powerful, but many of them kind of slipped into this slight trap, I think, of focusing on the issue. So COVID was a great case in point. You had a lot, and I mean a lot of advertising that during COVID that was really kind of, you know, talking about the seriousness of the issue, and, you know, it's all going to be okay. And actually those kind of ads were engaging, but they didn't necessarily end up being effective. Whereas ads which either kind of had a message of hope because they showed concretely how the brand could contribute, or frankly, which kind of just kind of took a slightly lighter view of things, were actually a little bit more effective. And we saw that again in, you know, ads that deal with sustainability, for instance. Again, ads that focused a lot on the problem, but less on the positive outcome, actually were kind of less effective than the ones that, you know, perhaps dealt with the issue with some humor, for instance, or dealt with the issue in a way that clearly articulated how the brand can help that issue, and how by using the brand you can help address the issue. So it was fascinating that, you know, it's easy when it comes to difficult or serious topics, it is easy to dramatize the problem. You know, that's arguably an easier thing to do than dramatize the solution. But it was the ads that dramatized the solution, or frankly, you know, took just a lighter, more positive approach to the messaging, that actually ended up being more engaging and being more effective. So yeah, fascinating to see that thread of, you know what, it's okay to be positive even in difficult times. It was interesting to see that thread through all of those kind of quite diverse topics that we've looked at and across the last 2 years. So yeah, that was really what we'd dwelled on, was, you know, is it okay to be, you know, to be a bit lighthearted? Is it okay to take a positive view at a difficult time? And I think the answer is absolutely yes, it is, because that seems to be associated still with more positive outcomes. Sorry, long description of that, but hopefully that was perfect.
I think you answered my follow-up questions. I don't know if you wanted to add anything for, you know, the two questions were, you know, one of the takeaways was, you know, using brand purpose in a powerful way. I think you did kind of address, you know, what that means and how brands can approach and think about it. So that was great. And then also, I don't know if you want to add anything here based on your work. You know, what are some tangible tips that you can share for creating and planning ad content in difficult times? I think you did touch on it, but I don't know if you wanted to expand at all.
We can cover a bit more. I mean, on brand purpose, it's kind of interesting in that, you know, lots of brands have, you know, really sought to articulate a higher reason for being than just being a great product. And that, you know, that continues to be a trend that we see. I think it can work really powerfully, but I'd make two observations. And one is, you know, authenticity is absolutely critical here. You know, if the brand doesn't have anything to say, or doesn't actually contribute to the issue or the purpose that it claims to have, people can see through that a mile off, and you definitely see some quite negative reactions to content that fails that sniff test, for want of a better word. So I think authenticity is particularly important when it comes to brand purpose, and not being too, you know, kind of po-faced and grandiose about it. You know, most of these products are just products, and they're not going to fundamentally change the world without a lot of other changes. So, you know, again, being self-aware enough rather than taking an enormously dramatic approach and to that purpose, I think can actually be quite powerful. So again, we've seen that in a number of the examples that we shared in previous webinars. So I probably won't say more about it than that. But I think in addition to it's okay to be positive, I think it's also important to be self-aware enough that you know you have to have a purpose that you can stand behind and genuinely do something about. In terms of other kind of tangible tips, I mean, I think the only other thing I'd kind of say we saw in the work we did was just, I guess, around the fact that, you know, a universal theme can be, or kind of something that is emotionally powerful can be articulated with all sorts of different storylines and narratives. So particularly that, you know, the work we did on inclusion and diversity was fascinating in that many, many brands, I think, have worried historically, at least, I think times are definitely changing, but many brands that have historically worried about, you know, using, you know, minority characters or storylines that might come from, you know, kind of traditionally underrepresented groups, for, you know, because they were scared of alienating a broader group or because they were scared it would only appeal to niche markets. And we saw very clearly in our data that that's not true. I think, you know, there are some really interesting ads that take a much more inclusive approach to casting a narrative, which, you know, done well, done in an engaging and empathetic way, were appealing to everybody. So, you know, it is interesting that I think a, you know, a kind of a positive narrative can really cross all sorts of barriers. So in the case, for instance, also of some of the sustainability work we recently did, you know, ads that actually treated the topic with a bit more humor actually tended to appeal more and engage more with people who actually were more cynical and less committed to the sustainability and green cause. You know, perhaps, the people that were, really kind of currently committed to it all, you know, they know the seriousness of it. They don't need to be told. Whereas actually the people who are a bit more complacent about, you know, sustainability issues, you know, arguably those are the people that need to be reached. And it was the kind of the funny ads. It was the slightly, less doom and gloom ads that actually appealed more to those people. So that was, I think, fascinating. Again, I think there's a, I think kind of universal themes, positive themes, messages of hope, they all, I think, have a much wider appeal than to just, you know, the people that are really perhaps committed to a particular cause. And that's a, I think, a useful lesson for all advertising.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have a lot of content in both the sustainability and the inclusive advertising. So I'll drop some links. So if people are interested, they can read a little bit more, check that out. So shifting gears a little bit, also this past month, we announced that we had expanded our Emotion AI offering for qualitative research with our new conversational engagement and valence metrics. So let's start with what they are. You know, what are these metrics and what do they do?
Right. They may sound a little odd, so yeah, we'd better explain ourselves. Yeah. A little bit. Expressiveness and valence, two slightly odd words. So expressiveness really is just a measure of really whether when people are, you know, experiencing something, engaging with content or whatever it may be, you know, are they showing that engagement on their face? Are they showing lots of expressions, or are they just kind of sat there like a bump on a log? And obviously, generally speaking, you don't really want people to be stony faced. You want people to show some kind of expressiveness. And we've seen over many years that, you know, content that generates expressions, you know, is usually associated with more positive behavioral outcomes. So sales effects for advertising, propensity to see films, etc. So it's an important measure because it's a good kind of headline as to whether you've engaged people or not. Valence is a metric that focuses on the nature of that engagement. So are people feeling, you know, are people showing expressions that are typically associated with a positive emotional state, or are they showing expressions that are typically associated with a negative emotional state? So, you know, obviously smiles tend to be positive, not always, but they tend to be, and likewise brow furrows tend to be negative, again, not always, but they can be. So we're looking at the, you know, the net positivity, if you like, with valence measures. Now the conversational bit is perhaps the bit of news. We've had measures of expressiveness and engagement and valence for a while. The news here, I guess, is around this conversational element. So one of the challenges in measuring the engagement people show and the positivity that they're showing on the face, it comes when people are talking, because obviously the mouth moves, you begin to distort some of the signals that we would typically look for. So the conversational metrics are a means of dealing with that, and in particular by focusing on some of the signals from the top part of the face, or at the very least kind of looking for additional signals beyond, say, mouth movements when it comes to positive states and smiles. So we're still looking to see whether someone's smiling while they talk, but it's being done in a slightly different way. So that gives us new metrics which are much more suited to some of the qualitative applications that I talked about right at the start of the podcast. So when, you know, when you are in conversation with a research participant and they're talking and they're giving their answer, obviously you as a researcher, you're highly interested in what they're saying. But we can also then add this additional layer about their kind of emotional state while they're speaking in a way that's much more accurate than perhaps we were able to before. So the signals were always there. It's just we've refined the metrics now to deal much better with that distortion that's caused by speech. So, yeah, we think this is a really exciting move because it will, I think, as I alluded to earlier, it will help allow us to help the qualitative research community understand a little better, you know, what people are feeling as well as what they're saying, and in particular while they're doing the search, that's that kind of one step removed because it's done often in a virtual environment these days. So yeah, I think a very exciting step for us, and glad we've got them out there as they've been in development for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think after reading the press release, also to add on to that, the two things I took away were really, you know, that we're continuously innovating to, you know, meet these kind of market challenges. And then you did mention that virtual component. So being able to evolve to, you know, meet these needs of these researchers, as you mentioned, as things are kind of moving more virtually, is just really exciting. So, okay. So from a technical perspective, how do these metrics actually work? So like, for example, we had shared a video with the press release that we'll also drop a link to here, but maybe you can talk through what people are seeing when they're looking at that video.
Yeah, if people take a look at that video, it was a recording of one of our team meetings. So we're not revealing a video of research participants. You know, we would obviously never do that anyway. But yeah, just to clarify, it's some of our team talking. But it's a good example because it kind of shows how the system works. In that, actually, one of the most powerful features of the system is not just that it focuses more on signals that don't necessarily include the mouth, but also baked into the system is the ability to spot when people are speaking or when they are not. And this is purely from the video. It's not relying on the audio. So that's important because in say a group discussion where one participant might be talking and the rest are kind of listening, the person that's talking is where we need to kind of apply some of these new metrics to. So actually what the system does, and you'll see this in that video, is while one of the meeting participants is talking, it's applying those conversational metrics to her signal. So we're able to understand a little more about her emotional state without the issues caused by mouth movements. But for everybody else that's listening, we're applying on normal metrics. So we're looking across the whole face all the time and are able to get their full reaction just from the points where they're listening. But then, of course, when the conversation changes and somebody else starts speaking, the system detects that, spots when someone else is talking, and applies the metrics to that individual. And then the person that was talking, now we're just going back to our normal metric set that looks again at the whole face. So it's quite a clever way of, you know, spotting when people talk and when they don't, applying the most appropriate metrics to measure response that way, and then aggregating across all those measures in a way that's fair, so that as a group as a whole, you can see, you know, where are the moments in the conversation that really begin to engage people, where are people beginning to get bored, where are people not that our meetings are ever boring, but, you know, where are people feeling more positive and where are they feeling more negative. So again, as a means of kind of shortcutting to the interesting parts of a conversation or the moments that are likely to be a really good illustration of a point, you know, that these approaches take, I think, you know, take us a step further. And certainly, you know, the way that they adapt to who's talking and who's not, I think is a really interesting innovation.
So cool. Love it. So earlier this year, we also had a very well-received joint webinar with Kantar, as you mentioned, on the topic of sustainability in advertising. So I think you gave a good recap, but maybe you have a few more, you know, key messages of, you know, what we talked about there. And I don't know if you are able to share any teasers for our joint 2023 webinar. But I guess just generally, you know, looking ahead, what are some other areas that the media analytics business area is working on, or what's up next?
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, in on the topic of sustainability, I think we did cover a lot of the territory that webinar covered earlier on. But yeah, I do think it was just interesting that content which, you know, you might think would only appeal to people that are, you know, particularly engaged with the sustainability movement at the moment, you know, actually could go a lot further and could appeal more broadly if it took the right approach. So those kind of more humorous storylines, the more kind of hopeful storylines, those were definitely ones which, you know, went beyond just the core constituent of people that are particularly passionate about sustainability. So you could, you know, there are even ads that, you know, almost kind of had a sustainability message as a byproduct. So for instance, there was some advertising that was really about ensuring that, you know, you minimize food waste, which obviously is particularly important now as we all face a, you know, kind of a cost of living crisis. You know, that's actually also a sustainability message. And yet that message was really powerful among people that were really pretty cynical about sustainability, because, you know, in part you're encouraging people to do something that is, you know, kind of positive for them and is easy for them. It's not a sacrifice. So you had some ads there that did particularly well, almost by having a sustainability message. Very likely they weren't trying to make a huge point, yet they were still actually very powerful on sustainability. So, you know, we saw that very clearly in the degree of engagement that those perhaps more hard to reach groups were showing with that kind of messaging. So, yeah, it was fascinating that you don't have to be, you know, advertising about sustainability doesn't have to be a polemic about how we all need to change. So that I thought was fascinating. In terms of kind of what we may see next and kind of topics that we may go to next, I think that, you know, there are so many things we could talk about. I do think, and obviously we're going to work with our partners like Kantar on joint webinars in future, but also we'll do others of our own. I can certainly see us doing work on attention and the best way to measure that, because that's a huge question in the media industry currently, you know, because, you know, planning not just for the number of people that go to a website or engage with a particular channel, but planning based on the degree to which they are likely to really spend some mental resources in those channels, that's hugely important. You know, we all know that there are many ads that we don't really look at or we skip and so on. And yeah, you know, finding the right measures of attention, I think, are really powerful. And clearly, obviously, some of the emotion AI metrics that we have, I think, have absolutely something to say about attention and engagement. So that's one area I suspect we'll talk about next year. And again, we've also done some more recent work that's looked at our ability to predict further, you know, some key key behavioral outcomes like sales, like you know, box office and so on. So again, I think we may share a bit more about that next year as well. So yeah, please stay tuned and get involved in those when they're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll put a plug here for people to sign up for our newsletter. So they'll be the first to know and make sure they're following us on social. So there'll be, you know, announcements for upcoming events and content and all that fun stuff. So stay tuned, definitely. So we covered a lot of ground. If you had one takeaway for people listening today, what would you like to tell them?
Yeah, great question. I think it would probably be that even in kind of difficult times, even when the mood is tough for a lot of people, you know, life does go on. And while I think brands absolutely have to be sensitive to the context in which they operate, I think actually, you know, some light relief can be helpful for people. You know, often it's the case that, you know, kind of some normality is a good thing, even in tough times. So absolutely, it can be the right thing for a brand to engage with a particular issue, particularly if they can really help and help address that issue in a tangible way. You know, they should do so, but equally, you know, it doesn't have to be done in a way which is kind of doom and gloom and focuses on the problem. So I'd kind of I was reflecting on the work we do on movie trailers, and I think, you know, there is a reason why the big Hollywood blockbusters rarely don't have a happy ending. You know, there's usually a positive ending there, and I think as a narrative structure that extends to advertising as well. So I would, you know, I would concentrate as much on the payoff as I would on the problem, I guess, particularly if you're an advertiser.
So. Also for our listeners, where can they go to learn more, or is there any kind of call to action that you have for them?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I would, you know, encourage people to, you know, engage with us on our social channels. You can always find us there. You can go to the website and get in touch with us that way. Yeah, you can reach out to me and the rest of the Media Analytics division on LinkedIn and other channels. So, yeah, happy to engage people however they want. But, yeah, we obviously put things out on our channels and there's contact forms on the website that people can use to get in touch directly. So we'd be happy to hear from people.
Perfect. Well, that is all I had for you. So, Graham, such a pleasure as always. Thank you so much once again for making time for this conversation. It was great.
Thank you. And always great to talk about this stuff. And hopefully it's of interest to everyone.
Absolutely.
It's always fascinating talking with Graham and our team about the type of data we can see in our global emotion database, the insights we're able to uncover for brands, clients, customers, but also diving deeper into some of the most recent developments with our new conversational metrics. We heard what our customers needed and are always innovating to make their lives a little bit easier. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the Human-Centric AI Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes. We're also on social media, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram at Affectiva or at SmartEye to share any feedback you have on the show and weigh in on the discussion using hashtag HumanAIPodcast. Don't forget to rate us and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.